All please rise. Please join us in the salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. The clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Watson.
Present.
Councilmember Hanson.
Here.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Lesler.
Yes.
Councilmember Birch.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here.
All present accounted for. Thank you, Council. Okay, next up on the agenda is the public comment period. This is the period where members from the audience can come address the Council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. Anything you'd like to do, we'd like to have your name and address in 3 minutes if possible. And we'll have a timer, so we'll give you a little bit of a leeway. So, any hands up that would like to speak to the council? There's a hand up back there, and then a second one. So, I saw his hand first, so we'll let you go first. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
To the podium and name and address the topic.
Good. My name is Jake Haldwell. My address is 4824 102nd Lane Southeast. Kirkland, Washington, and I am here to speak briefly about the recreational marijuana laws. I'm a managing member of Ocean Grown Enterprises, who hopes to get a recreational marijuana production and processing operation in Ferndale. I'm here to urge you not to pass any form of additional restrictions on the marijuana businesses that I understand you may be discussing today. I've written a letter to be handed out to you, but in the interest of time, I'm going to try to summarize my key points. First of all, I represent seasoned business people who have a very diverse experience. I personally have been practicing as a CPA in Washington State since 1977. I have worked for both entrepreneurial startups and companies regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission, including as chief financial officer of Red Hook Ale Brewery in Woodinville. Breweries and are also are subject to very restrictive laws by the Liquor Control Board, and I can assure you that they take their responsibilities very seriously. My co-investors are between 45 and 65 years old and include the internal auditor of a publicly traded company, the creative director of an advertising company, a purchasing manager, the former executive director of one of the largest charitable organizations in the state, and a person with executive responsibilities in retail. As you may or may not know, every investor, manager, and our spouses has been vetted by the Liquor Control Board as to the absence of any criminal history and the source of our funds. You typically do not know if the person invited into your home to repair your water heater has a criminal record, but you can be assured that we don't because of these background searches. We expect to invest $900,000 to start this business before generating any revenue. This is money that will go to the local businesses and contractors and in turn be spent on groceries, cars, toys, and other household goods in this community. Once we commence, operations, we have budgeted paying $35,000 per year for employees. But the key point is that for any business owner, we value certainty. We want to know what our costs, tax rates, and regulatory environments are. With certainty comes a willingness to invest and take a chance on market conditions. The byproduct of this investment is the creation of profits, money spent on the community, and the creation of jobs. These are All right. Thank you.
Council, any questions for this guest or this time? Or no? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. So next hand up. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Heather Wolf. I'm an attorney with Brownlee Evans, Wolf & Lee, 230 East Champion, Bellingham. Our firm represents Ocean Grown Enterprises, and I'm here today to comment on proposed changes to the recreational marijuana ordinance. We submitted written correspondence, so I just want to emphasize a couple key points. There have not been any changes to state or federal law since you enacted your ordinance. I'd like to emphasize that your insurance carrier, your city attorney, and your staff has recommended that you not change your ordinance at this time. the recent opinion issued by the Washington State Attorney General that people have been talking about is just what it says it is. It's an opinion. Any local jurisdiction that enacts any sort of ban, whether it's temporary, emergency, or permanent, can be subject to legal challenge. The opinion may, in fact, result in the legislature taking action to clarify that local jurisdictions cannot ban recreational marijuana operations. The only change that has occurred since you enacted your ordinance is that businesses have applied for licenses both at the state and local level in reliance upon your ordinance. I want to remind council that the ordinance was the subject of 3 public work sessions, a great deal of staff time, and hearings before the Planning Commission and the City Council. So nothing has occurred to justify undoing this legislative process. My letter sent to you earlier today discusses the pitfalls of the changes that were discussed at last week's City Council Committee meeting. We urge you not to create a conditional use process for these types of businesses. Staff has already reviewed this issue, and it was discussed in your November staff report. It was discussed with both the Planning Commission and the City Council. Staff concluded that the conditional use process would not be beneficial, and it would, in fact, make the permitting process for these types of businesses less transparent. Your existing ordinance already addresses the impacts of these businesses. An additional hearing examiner review would only cloud the process at the time and expense of the city and the applicants. As my client has testified, the most important thing for any type of business is to succeed is to have certainty regarding the laws applicable to the business. So we urge you to maintain your existing ordinance. Your ordinance was crafted to comply with state law, and to change it now flies in the face of reason and the business owners who have invested heavily in reliance upon your ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next up to this subject. Okay, none on this side. Sir.
I have several points.
First
is Papa John Robinson, 6072 Malloy, AFH. The first thing I want to do as a preliminary thing is to thank Brent for my apparently official excused absence last time. I'm sure you all missed me terribly. But then what I want to do now, I'm going to give the mayor an award, and then if I have time, some accolades and plaudits. First thing I have is I went, and some of you, the cat's already out of the bag, and I don't do a good job keeping the cat in the bag. The claws just get in my way, and and I'm going to hand him a parapraxis tonight. And I would like him to keep the parapraxis until he finds some champions somewhere among you. There will be someone, at least one, if not several, he's going to have to choose between you to find out who is going to be the champion parapraxis doer of the year. So I'm sure you'll have some sort of honorary banquet in your honor when it comes time for the award of the parapraxis. I'm also, since he might be confused, I'm going to give him instructions on operating the parapraxis.
Thank you.
Okay, now I'll give you a hint. The parapraxis is named after a very famous German scientist that I knew somewhat because he wrote in the late 1800s. And he was kind of a friend of mine. His first name was Sigmund. So therefore his last name was...
Freud. Very good.
You get to go to the head of the class. Okay, his last name was Freud. Now, Freud, I guess, had a little bit of a problem on it. You can decide for yourself. Because this is a parapraxis I'm going to give you right here.
Oh.
It is obviously...
Freudian
slip.
We're moving in a weird direction.
Great pleasure. I give it to you, Mr. Mayor, in a cookie bag so you can hide it.
From my wife?
So here's the instructions.
Okay, thank you.
Now, for those who may not know what a parapraxis is, it is a slip. You look it up, P-A-R-A-P-R-A-X-I-S, and now have been elucidated. Right here in public. Now, the second thing is some accolades and plaudits. I do think, as a member of the community here, sitting in the committee, I have, and I've said this before, actually, I'm very, very proud of our Chamber of Commerce.
30 seconds.
And Guy O, as you know, is leaving us, and I'm hoping that we will all, as a community, do something in his honor, because I think, as a community member, and I've only been here 3 years, and I understand he's been here at least a decade, he's done a marvelous job. Next time will be the next thing I didn't get to.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Okay, anyone else for the public comment period? Try to top that. No, seeing none. Okay, moving on in the agenda. Council, before you is the consent agenda.
Move to accept.
Okay, moved and seconded by Councilperson Ingram, seconded by Councilperson Olson. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Next up is the capital project update.
Welcome.
Nice to see you.
Thank you. Good evening, Council. It's Katie Ratter, the Public Works Project Manager. We've got three projects that are going on right now or soon to start. I'll start off with our street tree project. As you know, we put out to bid installation of approximately 43 street trees along Main Street between Douglas and Church Road. Initially, we plan to start the work this week, but the landscaper that was the low bidder on this project, they're also the landscaper for Ferndale Physical Therapy. And Ferndale Physical Therapy is located on Hamlin. They're working to get their final occupancy done soon, and so our landscaper asked if they could actually move back a week so they could accommodate the physical therapy's schedule so they can get them in that building. So you'll see that work start next week. So I don't know if anybody's getting questions about that. The Main Street work.
You're going to put the trees in when it's like 12, 15 degrees? Or?
It will be 12 or 15 degrees next week.
To dig a hole?
When it's frozen.
Okay.
Is there a question in there?
Always power
tools. Are we going to dig a hole in the frozen ground, 40-some frozen?
Won't be frozen.
Yeah.
Power tools.
Okay.
Big orders.
So it's a warm wave coming next week.
Western Washington, it's going to be 50 by next week.
Anyway, okay.
Moving on. Yeah, just tell yourself.
I guess your question was answered. The answer is
it wasn't
yes,
answered. They were just obnoxious, so we're going to move on. We would still dig the trees this week. That,
really?
Yeah. They're dormant. They'd be okay.
Okay.
Next on the list.
Are we going to do watering bags like we did last time?
Yeah, we'll need to water the trees at least through the first year just to make sure that the roots set. So I've got some watering worked into the contract with this landscaper, but we'll probably organize something as far as, you know, ongoing watering later into the spring and then through the summer.
Back in order, Council. Hands up. In order to speak, please. Thank you.
I just got distracted by my counterpart.
Yeah, I know. I hear. It's not the first time. Probably won't be the last.
Next? Okay. Cottage Place Sewer. So that project got started midweek, the week before last, so on the 22nd. They started off by TVing the sewer line to make sure where the side services were at. Work has been progressing fairly well. They did do work on Saturday, the 25th, out in Golden Eagle Drive, so it wouldn't impact the school schedule. And so that work took them a little bit longer than they thought. They ran into some groundwater, but that was it all worked out in the end, and so they got that manhole installed. So this week they'll probably finish up the sewer. I think they've got about 15 or 20 feet left to install, and they've got a hydrant to install tomorrow. So once they're done with that, the next thing to do would be paving. The paving crews or the paving plants, asphalt plants, are closed this time of year. Likely you'll see that occur probably mid-March. They'll haul asphalt from Walk and Builders Belleville plant, which is in Skagit County, because they will open a little bit sooner than the one here in Ferndale. So that's about all I have for that.
Questions? Seeing none, moving on.
All right.
Good job.
Last and not least is Church Road. So I don't know if you've had a chance to drive up and down Church Road. PSE has been out there for the last several weeks installing poles and moving their power lines back away from the road. They're scheduled to be done this week. Next week, or actually this later this week, Thursday, Friday, and then the following Monday and Tuesday, Intulight will be out there to install 5 additional poles, and then they will be installing the new street lights. So that's the next order of work. After they're done, Comcast will is scheduled to come in and move their facilities. They're actually stringing new wire and doing some underground work. That's scheduled for approximately the week of February 10th, and will take about 5, maybe 6 weeks to get accomplished. So they'll be done mid-March. After that, BlackRock will come swooping in. They will just relocate their I think they have fiber. They'll take their fiber from the old poles and move it over to the new poles. And then after that, Frontier will be out. They're scheduled to take approximately 6 weeks, which puts us right out to the very first part of May, which is when we have scheduled to get our contractor hopefully under contract and out on the site. So just to kind of let you guys know, it's not very standard for this work to actually occur before the contractor gets on site. In fact, you know, I was talking to some of the subcontractors for PSE, and they're like, this never happens. So things are moving forward, and it's a good situation. So that's about all I have for that.
Any questions? Okay, Councilperson Ingram first, and then Bursch after that.
Katie, were you needing LED lights?
Yes. It's the new city standard. All new lights are LEDs, including private development.
Next.
Why aren't all the utilities underground?
That's a great question. That decision was made by council, I want to say, the year before last. When the city goes and widens a roadway, if we, based on our franchise agreements with the various utility companies, if we go in and we say, hey, we're widening the road and your stuff's in our way, if we ask them to relocate, they will do it at their cost if you're replacing like with like. So if it's overhead and you tell them to, you know, put it overhead again, then they'll cover all that cost. There's no additional cost to the taxpayer. If you go and you tell the utility companies, and this is what we did actually for the phase of Main Street that was done in 2010, your utilities are in the way and we want you to put them underground. The city ends up actually paying the incremental cost difference from what it would cost to just relocate the utility overhead versus the cost to put it underground. It's very expensive to put things underground. Underground utility work is pricey. And I can't remember off the top of my head what it was going to cost for Church Road, but it was...
It's pushing $1 million.
Yeah, it was starting $1 million. So, cost. That would have been the short answer.
Well, it takes more right of way.
I like to ramble. Mm-hmm. Pardon?
Doesn't it take more right of way?
That's the other thing. There's, you know, once you start getting stuff in the ground, you've got your utility lines, you've got the city's water lines, the city sewer lines, the city storm sewer lines. You need enough room for the underground utilities. They can't stack on top of each other, so you end up having, you know, all these lines that are vertical in the air, you know, laying them out sideways. So Councilmember Ingram's right, we would have had to purchase additional right-of-way. So it's not just the cost to install, but then it's the additional cost for purchasing the right-of-way needed to get enough room to get those underground.
Any other questions for Public Works? Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Council, I always enjoy getting a chance to tell you great things about Janice Marlega's Public Works staff, and I want to note that. Obviously, you've seen Katie Ratter in the past, where Katie doesn't know normal hours. If it takes nights, it takes weekends, whatever it takes to get the job done to make sure our contractor keeps working. Katie had a little touch of the flu, so our newest inspector, Larry Honeycutt, came in on a weekend because it was essential, basically, to allow the contractor to work on the site near the school on Cottage Place. Tight space, not much room. Larry willingly came on the weekend, went out and inspected 2 or 3 times that day, came back in and did paperwork, keeping them in. And it's probably because he just said, well, if I have to follow Katie, I guess I better be totally dedicated to the job. But again, it's Janice has a crew that gives everything to the city, and it's a testament to her leadership. So good job. she's proud of them, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on to the ordinance on mayor pay. So I'm going to...
There's not an update on the library?
Sorry.
There could be an update on the library. Library is progressing well. You've probably seen the SIPs panels, those structurally insulated panels. So those SIPs are going up rather quickly. They actually are going up in a prearranged order. It kind of looks like they said, well, let's put one over there, let's put one over there. But actually, this is by design. There's a purpose for it as far as how they interlock. The cold weather that we're experiencing now and in the next couple of days may give us a bit of a delay because there's only so much you can do when it gets to be that cold. So far, our original completion date was the end of July. With the last cold snap we had, we've added 20 days on, so we're now approaching near the end of August. So I wouldn't be surprised if we actually end up closer to the end of August at the end of the project. But otherwise, again, they're moving along well. There's good interaction between the contractor and the architects, and our Mike Cole, our on-site supervisor, is working diligently to be sure that everything is done properly. So I'm pleased so far. It really is. We're out of the ground. We're a lot of the unknown unknowns, as a former defense secretary would like to say. The unknown unknowns are gone, so now we're just dealing with what might be considered change orders, dealing with things that just need to happen along the way to make it a good project. So it's so far so good.
Questions on the library project of the city administrator? Okay, seeing none, moving on to the next thing on the agenda, the discussion ordinance on mayor pay.
Thank you, Council and Mayor Jensen. In 2013, toward the end of the year, the council brought forward, Councilmember Olson, I guess, suggested modification to the way we pay the mayor. That was referred back to committee by the full council, and we brought it back there so that we could look at a variety of things. The main one was that the direction of council was to go toward 90% of the average, or the high, we called it the high average, of the similar-sized jurisdictions for population. And then the council also wanted to remove council manager forms of government, because the mayors of a council manager form of government are a little bit more symbolic in that the mayor is not directly elected by the people in those cities. The mayor is one of the council members elected by their peers to become the mayor for representing them at ribbon cuttings and stuff like that. In those forms of government, it's the city manager that's, you know, the main administrator or the main person carrying out all of the laws enacted by the council. So we brought that back to committee, and we had a discussion by committee. The committee simply recommended forwarding this proposal back to the full council for discussion again. The ordinance before you does exactly what we talked about in December, and that is placing the mayor's salary 90% of the high average of the AWC salary survey. And that's pretty much it. Greg can probably speak to the other information that he put in the packet. We did split out that information related to city, to mayor council forms of government and council manager forms of government for you. And then also Councilmember Mutchler submitted some of his own information related to this issue. So with that, if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
I just wanted to clarify.
Councilperson Olson?
For Mark's benefit there, this is for when Mayor Jensen leaves, not right. For Mayor Jensen.
Yes, thank you. This would be effective January 1st, 2016.
Okay.
You can't actually you can't decrease his pay during his term. So.
Mm-hmm. Councilperson Goodrich?
But what this is proposing, if I read all this stuff right, is a reduction in the mayor's pay.
Correct. It would reduce it.
Was Greg going to follow up? Or?
Yeah, so we'll go to the city administrator.
Yeah, as our clerk said, when it was referred back, there was the issue of whether it's strong mayor, weak mayor form of government. So in the packet, I did break out those that have managers as opposed to administrators, so you can see what effect that has. I also put in the packet just that AWC, our bracket for population, 7,500 to 14,999, and there's 20 cities in that bracket, and we're fifth out of 20. There's also, and I guess this is what gets somewhat interesting, is how you compare and contrast. As you are aware, AWC uses one matrix, and that is population. So magically, whenever you grow to your next bracket, you move up, and usually there's a relationship between the size of the city and the compensation, not only for mayor and council members, but also department heads in some regards. The theory being is that larger cities have more employees, it's a more complex organization, and perhaps there's more work to do. It seems bizarre because in large cities you also have assistants. So you have a public works director, an assistant public works director, and a finance director, and an assistant. So even though there's a lot more to do, you also have a lot more hands in the mix as well. So for better or worse, the AWC breaks down cities in brackets of population. If you remember that 90% of AWC was something that we conjured up a while back in our union negotiations, because with union negotiations, one of the things you many times start off with is trying to say, okay, how does Ferndale compare to other cities? And that is, what other cities can be compared, rightfully so, to Ferndale? And so many times we would sit down with the unions and try to figure out comparable cities, and we wouldn't be very successful at it. They would want some cities for various reasons, and we would want other cities, and we really weren't able to come up with a matrix, population, property tax, sales tax, ability to pay, location to I-5, housing costs. We tried a lot of different mixes and matches, and we never really could have come up with something that the two groups could agree on. So out of that disagreement came what I came up with, which is, okay, well, we want to pay at least 90% of the high average. And it was just something just literally plucked out of the air. And we've used that not strictly for every position in the city, but we've used that kind of illustratively as we go through the various union negotiations to see how our job titles compare to other job titles. And that gets to be a little difficult as well, because one person's job title might not include the same duties as that same job title in another city. So at best, it's comparing different size apples, maybe, instead of apples to oranges. You try your best to at least stay in the apple bin, so to speak. So population is one way to split it out. There's other ways to split it out as well, and I think that was led to Council Member Mutchler's information that he submitted, where instead of taking that somewhat artificial population bracket, he stretched the bracket upwards and backwards to kind of see how other cities larger and smaller than us fare. So if you want to have some sort of a matrix, you can certainly have that. If you want to, just pay the council member and mayor a lot, a little, or in between, that's totally up to you. There doesn't seem to be a hard set formula out there. You can see yourself that even in cities in our bracket, the mayor's pay goes as high as $5,700 a month and as low as $500 a month. So even within the same bracket of cities on population, there is a wide discrepancy in what those city councils have decided is the appropriate pay for the mayor, and I'm assuming that also then carries over to the council as well.
Councilperson Olson?
This was just started as ways to try and figure out pays and make pays comparable, and I think we're going down a dangerous path if we change from what you're using for everybody else to other formulas, because then other formulas appear to be higher, and those will probably be brought up the next time we're going to have union negotiations, and we used it for him, why can't you use it for us type thing. This has gotten so convoluted, I can't believe it. This is strictly about the mayor's pay. All of a sudden now some people are talking about council pay. It's not about council pay. We had a discussion in there about raising council pay, and that went nowhere, so we stopped. So this is strictly about mayor pay. We don't. We raised it in, what was it, 95, 96, somewhere in there.
When was your first year in office?
97. That's 2007. 2008?
You mean when
No, no. No,
it's 2006.
Oh, no, I'm talking about yours.
Oh.
2008.
2008?
May 2008.
What was it? Okay.
Okay.
And it went
from 1500, I believe it was. Okay. And everyone knows the reason why we did that. The council pay has remained the same since that time, other than cost of living adjustments, correct?
No, no, that's not correct.
Councilperson Hansen.
Okay. It was at about the same time that council pay got changed from 200 to 500. The 200 was still the base pay, but then we tagged on the 6 meetings a month, and that occurred just before you were elected.
Correct.
So that it went into effect the year that you were elected, but some didn't get it for 2 more years.
Correct.
Right.
Okay, I think I was in that first batch, but I don't recall.
But it was right around the same.
My point being, it wasn't, it hasn't really increased that much. I was just putting it back to, we don't supervise anyone. He supervises everyone in the city for a city employee. So it's just out there. I'm not going to be running for mayor, so I really don't care. It's something that was just proposed if we want to get in line with all the other 90% things, and that's why it's out there.
Okay. Councilperson Mutchler and then Watson.
Yeah, I just have a question for the mayor, but I'll just clarify what I attempted to do on my research, which I believe is accurate. Nobody's saying otherwise. The ADBC chooses these city brackets probably to divide the state up into whatever. It's arbitrary. I just suggested that maybe a fairer bracket matrix, because we're currently at the upper end of our bracket. We're going to pop into the new one in a few years here because of we're not in the middle of it, that's for sure. I just listed cities, 10 cities larger than us, 10 cities smaller than us, that we're right in the middle, whether you choose 7 above or 7 below. Or if you just go by size, the cities that are 3,000 larger than us or 3,000 smaller than us, if you take that as the matrix, we're pretty close, the current salary is. I just want to ask Gary, what do you put in, maybe 10, 12 hours a week being mayor? I mean, I know that you do extra things you probably don't have to do, but I think you should give us an idea.
I calculate it as because you go night meetings and then it's very typical to have weekend activities. I'm about 52 hours a week.
So what that would do for the next mayor, even if he's half of that, is you're saying the only people that can run for mayor are the people that can financially self-support the occupation. And my impression was, at least this was told to me, and I won't say who because he didn't tell me I could, but was that there was a feeling that being mayor impacted your business, impacted your ability to do certain things, and I wouldn't be surprised if it did.
I wouldn't dispute that.
Yeah. So there was consideration that you're going to be taking time away from your work to do this, and I don't know if anyone would see the next mayor with this city growing the way it is. I don't know if it'll be 40, 50 hours a week, but it's not going to be 10 hours a week. So I think the direction is the wrong way. This city has led in a lot of areas. The 90% thing, and Greg has correctly mentioned that it's 90% of the high range, and we might forget what that means. The cities submit to AWC what they're willing to pay a clerk or a administrator, and it will pay them between this and this. They may be here, they may be in the middle. We don't know exactly where they are, but the range is given to us, and we've chosen the upper end as the average. So that has the healthy effect, in my view, to push salaries up where we're attracting and keeping good people. I also don't think that's something the council has come around and said, that's our policy or that's our doctrine. It's just something that the administrator has used. And if we were to do the same thing for us as council members, we would take a decrease in pay down to $400 a month if that was our policy. And I actually think everything should be going the other direction as a leading city that's kind of on cutting edge and doing a lot of work. Honestly, I think the salary should go the other way for this mayor and maybe for the next mayor. But that's my weighing in on it.
Before I go to Councilor Swall, it's a hard, it's a really hard comparison. I have a good relationship with all the other small town mayors. I meet with them with COG and then the Small City Caucus at least twice per month. And it's hard to compare. Linden's are about our size, but you know, their mayor chooses to, you know, I think he said he's like less than 20 hours per week, about 18. I made the personal choice to kind of do my hours. We had, you know, we had some city hall, we had some personnel changes. It is true, Councilperson Olson is correct, is that I don't have a time card. I don't have anybody checking me whether I go in and out. You know, I try to keep in touch with Greg and say we're here back and forth. But it's impossible to look at that chart and compare cities because it's really a personal choice. You are correct, Councilperson Olson, is I could choose tomorrow to say, I'm going to work 3 hours a week and just to heck with you and, you know, pile up the paperwork that needs to be signed and I'll come in once a day. So it is a tough one because it's kind of the person in the seat making that decision.
Right.
One of my strengths in life is also one of my weaknesses, is that I'm famous for, okay, let's just dive in the deep end, and I have a tendency to fill my to-do list with too much, not enough. It's like, oh, you can't do that all in one day, you stupid idiot. But that's, so it's a tough one, you know, because you look, and every 4 years, if you could elect a mayor that you know, there was a mayor at one time that they never saw that mayor in City Hall. Okay, can't do anything about it. So it's just looking at cities around the state, you can't really make a comparison. It's people, not comparison. So you're both kind of correct. I'll go to Councilperson Watson and then Olson.
I could support lowering it. I mean, we're still talking about $1,800 per month. I mean, that's more than some people make working full time, and it is a part time job. And, you know, it would still be a lot more than you would make on council, assuming that you're apparently going to more meetings than a council member would. I just don't have the problem with it, lowering it a little bit. And if you want to do it all, we can lower council pay, too, if we want. I mean, I didn't run for council to make any money.
Councilperson Olson?
Sam, correct me. We can't decrease his pay, but we can do like we did for Gary. We could... If the next mayor and all of us decide, you know what, that correct. Person turned out okay, we could bump it up.
Yes, the Constitution allows for an increase in mayor's pay as long as they have nothing to do with it. So if there was a tiebreaker involved, they couldn't be involved.
Great. So I appreciate your honesty, and that's the point I'm trying to make, is that the next person could come in and do 3 hours a week. We don't know until that person gets here. So it's best now to do it while we don't know who's going to apply for that or run for that, and so it doesn't look personal. I won't say that.
Just move your
door. Yeah. Okay. With that, I move to adopt Agenda Bill 1402-002.
Second.
Okay, move and second. Further discussion, Councilperson Birch.
At what point do we consider the mayor a full-time position?
Well, then you jump into, a full-time position. You're going to add to your costs.
I don't believe we can reclassify the mayor.
You can't reclassify, but your pay could reflect.
Yeah. It's a part-time position.
Yeah, you could vote to pay benefits to a mayor. You could vote to pay medical pension. That's up to a council and the direction of the city. So there isn't a hard fast line there. And I'm sure I would say, you know, that probably that high person on a high salary that's $5,500. Hope they consider themselves full time, or they're overpaid. But that's their city's thing. Councilperson Ingram, and then Mutzler.
Well. But that brings up a point. 25, 30 years down the road, when Ferndale is a city of 40,000, that's a full-time mayor. I don't care how you look at it. So how do we go about, or how would a future council go about applying to the state, I assume.
You would adopt a charter.
You would just adopt a charter.
You would go and do what Bellingham did, and you would adopt a charter. It's basically your own constitution.
Thank you.
Councilperson Mushler, and then Councilperson Hansen.
Yeah. I just think, a comment that came, I think Greg made it, I think at the end of the day, this is something the voters should be able to reward or not reward the mayor, not council. I think it has the risk of being a little too political when all is said and done. And I think there's good evidence that the mayor's salary is pretty close to where it should be. Proportionally, if you did the same thing with the mayor that you're doing with council, council's distance from the average is about 30% above the average. If you do that with the mayor is about where he's supposed to be. Let the voters decide whether the mayor is doing a good job or not, not the council. They've done a pretty good job.
Councilperson Hansen, moving up.
I want to respond to the last thing you said, John. It is the council's responsibility to determine the mayor's salary, not the voters. How are you going to do that? You know, elect the mayor and then go out and have an election to see whether you should pay him $200, $500, $1,500, or $3,000 a month? They're going to pick $200. In fact, I don't even think you could have that kind of a vote. So I don't see that as a possibility. But to the point that I was going to make, I'm really torn on this one because I think we need to pick a salary and stick with it. It is what it is. If the guy doesn't earn it, then that's where the public comes in. Then you have the public throws him out of office, and that has occurred a couple of times. And on the other hand, is $2,500, $2,600 too rich for this mayor? A lot of what Gary does voluntarily. It's not, Gary's not doing it because Gary is trying to impress somebody. I know that. We all know Gary well enough to know that. So if a mayor voluntarily does work 52 hours a week and we have reestablished this at 1800, do you really want a system where let's give the guy 2 or 3 months and then if he's doing a better job, we'll give him more money? Unfortunately, it doesn't work the other way around. Where if he's not doing the job, we say, well, we can take some away. I'm torn on it. I really haven't made up my mind yet which way I'm going to go on this. It has its strong points. It has its weak points.
Councilperson Olson and then Goodrich.
I understand what Mel's saying, and I kind of agree, but in the same sense, the next mayor shouldn't benefit from the salary bump that you got for the amount of work that you've done to restore the system. So I understand the turmoil that he's going through because I'm sure all of us are thinking about that. But at some point, we're just going to keep bumping it up, and each successor is going to get better off because of the last guy, even though he got thrown out of office. It could happen. It happened on the last time when you got in, 86% of the vote to 14%. But then we're stuck paying that kind of wage for 4 years, and like Mel said, nothing we can do about it.
Councilperson Goodrich, and then Councilperson Metzler.
I'm in the same boat as Councilmember Hansen. I'm really kind of torn about this, because part of it is we're playing what ifs. What if this happens? What if Gary decides to run again in 2 years and he gets reelected again for a third term? It's a possibility of the what-if things.
No.
That's what he said to me a couple of years ago.
That's what he always
says.
He was
going to do one term, but he ended up doing two.
I want to stay married.
But, we have no idea who the other person is going to be, the quality of this thing. My question is, and I don't remember, go off somebody else's memory here, how did we come up with the current dollar amount that the mayor is currently paying?
Pulled it out of the air.
Pulled that out of the
mayor was out of town and they pulled it out of the air.
Somewhere.
That was much more than the past one, I believe.
I don't know. I wasn't there, so who made the motion that
me.
Night?
I pulled it out of the air.
Which we've done a lot of pulling out of the air, says the council, dollar amounts, I think.
And other places.
Yeah.
Mostly other
places. I don't know. It's just, this is just a tough thing to, to do. I don't like lowering anybody's pay, current or future. I've been in that boat myself, and it's, not a fun place.
Councilperson Mutchler and then Watson.
Well, I'm going to repeat just one thing. This current salary is in line as an average with cities near our size. It isn't out of line with that. I also think a new mayor could, excuse the expression, kiss ass for 3 months to go to 1,000 meetings to just at least get on the work. We don't want that. It just becomes a little bit too political. I would just encourage my colleagues, if you decide to reduce it, to not reduce it so much. You're looking at a $10,000 a year reduction if you multiply it out. I just don't think that's a positive direction for the city. That's all I have.
Councilperson Watson?
I guess for me it doesn't really matter who the next mayor is or who the next three mayors are. It's a comfort level on what level of pay I'm willing to give a mayor for a part-time job, basically. So it's still $1,800 a month for a part-time job. And if you choose to do more than that, that's certainly up to the mayor. But it's still, again, it's $1,800 a month, which is, quite frankly, a lot of money for a part-time job. And it's what I'm comfortable with. And the fact that we're saying $1,800, but the ordinance itself says it's 90% of the high average. So whatever that 90% of the high average is going to be on January 1st, 2016. So we don't really have an exact number now. But that's kind of my comfort level, frankly.
Councilperson Ingram?
Well, a couple of things. I didn't see anything in this ordinance where it said that we are automatically going to look at raising the next mayor's salary at some point or some future mayor's salary. It says what it is. 80% of the high average. 90% of the high average, excuse me. And I think that's, you stick to that. You just stick to it. And Gary made the point that council or committee meetings last week when we looked around the table and asked several of us, did you even know what the position paid when you ran for council? And the answer was no. Never crossed our, I had no idea what council pay was when I ran first time. And it's like, if you're running for the money, you're an idiot, because there ain't enough money in the world to put up with what you're putting up with. I mean, it's like, I've lived in towns where they had exactly the same city council mayor system, where the city council made exactly the same money that we make, the population was 200,000, and the average campaign cost for a city council position was $17,000. Now, who's getting paid what under the table for that job? We don't want to start that. We don't want to start putting somebody in a position where the only way they can afford to run for office is to spend a gazillion dollars to get elected to a part-time job. So I'm very comfortable with this ordinance the way it's written. I think staff's done a good job. I think they've done a very good job. And personally, I'd like to move the question.
I'll second that.
Yeah.
Okay, so moved and second, call for the question, so it cancels any further discussion. Roll call vote.
We are now voting on the question, or are you voting on the motion?
Your question, you're voting on to stop discussion.
Thank you.
Councilmember Watson?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Ingram?
Aye.
Excuse me, Councilmember Olson?
Aye.
Councilmember Ingram?
Aye.
Councilmember Mussler?
This is to stop discussion, correct?
Correct.
Aye.
Councilmember Birch?
Aye.
Hi. Okay, discussion is over to the main motion. Back going right again. Roll call vote.
Of course. Councilmember Watson.
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen.
Aye.
Councilmember Olson.
Aye.
Councilmember Ingram.
Aye.
Councilmember Mutchler.
Nay.
Councilmember Birch.
Aye.
Councilmember Goodrich.
No.
Okay, motion carries.
That was a good discussion.
Thank you.
definitely be discussion.
Okay, next discussion, 2014 to 2017, stormwater. Our finance director will have the floor. Welcome, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. Good evening. We're passing out a one-page discussion points tonight. We went through this at committee last week, Public Works Committee. There may be some extras there. Make sure everybody gets one. We'll kind of go through the same discussion and with a little change at the end. So a few weeks or months ago, the storm utility, Public Works, presented a CIP capital improvement program for storm utility. It has pretty green and blue lines, and y'all adopted that. And it's fairly substantial, 2014 through 2019. Average spending is near maybe a little more than $500,000 each year, peaking in 2017 where $915,000 was on the CIP. That includes a $300,000 for a new street sweeper, but fairly substantial capital costs. So what we wanted to do is load that into a spreadsheet and see if our existing rate structure would support that level of capital investment. While we're doing that, we also wanted to take a look at point number two and three. Point number two is on the revenue side. We recently adopted a ordinance whereby the Southwest Storm Pond, which was completed recently, wherein we found we have some excess capacity, came up with a formula for charging undeveloped land developers a fee for using that storm pond instead of putting aside building lots for a local storm detention facility in the housing neighborhood. So it's a good thing, and we haven't seen any money yet, but the projection is $600,000 over 20 years. So I'm putting in $30,000 a year assumption on revenues. $30,000 times 20 years gets you that $600,000. And each lot is actually stated in the ordinance as an attachment. So we should see that money come in. It won't come in at $30,000 a year. It'll be higher or lower. You know how that goes. So that's in the spreadsheet. A little bit of enhanced revenue there. Point three, we've added a storm tech in mid-2015. That was presented as a decision card, and we delayed on that for 2014.
Excuse me, just going back to the $600,000. Let's say that big parcel at Church and Main develops, and they pay that all their connection fees. Would you go back and redo the projections instead of doing $30,000 a year? Take that chunk out and then do a projection on the others?
We would adjust, certainly. We'd show the actual revenue collected in any year, and including if that corner does indeed develop, we'll certainly get more than $30,000. It's on the spreadsheet. I think it's over $100,000 for that corner. It's fairly large. But then we would just, you know, the next 29 years, we just divide by whatever's left.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good question. So we did add in the spreadsheet, and obviously it's not proof, but it's a mid-2015 added another full-time equivalent person to help in our storm utility and all the stuff we're doing and not doing, actually. And then it brings us down to point number four. We need to talk about this a little bit in terms of just a little background in terms of a rate adjustment and higher storm utility tax. Background, when the storm utility was in its infancy, from 1999 for 8 years, almost $100,000 a year was of sales tax and precious solid waste tax was added to the storm fund, was booked into the storm fund. 1999 for 8 years running, almost $800,000 in total. Finally, in 2006, council adopted a storm billing, $3.50 a month for the average single-family resident in 2006. Well, we're at $10 a month now. And also, the general fund, as usual, my prediction is that we're underwater in 2015. Not a whole lot, but we're $100,000 underwater in 2015 in the general fund. Why? Biggest reason is we've been enjoying this jail of credit of between 70 and 80 grand a year for 10 years. We've been enjoying that. We took some money out of reserves 9 years ago and gave the county, and they said, well, we'll give you a credit on your jail costs, 70 to 80 grand a year, and we've been enjoying it. Goes away in 2015. It's not 100 grand, it's closer to 80, but we've got about a $100,000 deficit right now, projected for 2015 general fund. Going back to that 100 grand a year for 8 years, precious sales tax and solid waste dollars were booked into the storm fund. Greg and I went to visit the auditors down on the waterfront. Nice office. They must have got a good lease deal.
State auditors.
What were you thinking?
I just wanted to clarify that for the audience.
SAO, the State Auditors Organization. We talked about this deal where I presented it as kind of a undocumented interfund loan. 1999 for 8 years, and I said, we really would like the storm fund to pay that loan back. And the auditor looked at it kind of funny and said, no documentation, that's too far back. No way you can call that an interfund loan repayment. But the auditor suggested, it's honest to God, the auditor suggested, you could get some money out of the storm fund by increasing utility tax, which goes to the general fund. You could do that for 8 years and get you $800,000 back. And I almost fell over because that's the exact procedure I was thinking of that we did recently in water sewer rates. And we lowered water sewer and increased utility tax. There was no change to the average homeowner's bill in total. Well, it was less, 20 cents less or something. We could do the same thing on the storm. Lower storm rates by 10% in 2015. Increase utility tax on storm utility rates from 9%, which goes to general fund, to 20%, goes to general fund. No change in the average bill. 20 cents less every 2 months. Water, sewer, storm, utility tax. 20 cents less if you did that in 2015. That would bring in over 70 grand in the general fund. We suggest a 10-year sunset on that to recoup our $800,000. Alternatively, at committee last week, one suggestion was, well, don't lower the storm rate. Just recover some money into the general fund. Increase utility tax from 9% to 20%. But leave the storm rate alone. Well, that does result in a little bit higher bill, $2.20 every 2 months on the total water sewer storm bill. That's 1.28%. So you could go that way.
Did you say $2.20?
What did I say? Sorry. $2.20 on the typical homeowner that uses 12 units of water.
Okay.
The typical single-family resident. It's a little over 1%.
Okay.
The mayor's. Anyway, I kind of prefer the second one in that if we go out, and we probably will, with your concurrence, go out for a sewer revenue bond this year. We got a bunch of stuff to do capital-wise for sewer. The calculation looks at water, sewer, storm combined in terms of cash balance and coverage ratios and that sort of thing, and revenue streams. So the second alternative, if you went with this idea to recover that $800,000 that was given to the storm fund prior to charging ratepayers in 2006, then that's a preferred method. The numbers look better to go out for a sewer revenue bond.
Okay.
If you put all this in the spreadsheet, I'm not going to hand it out. It's a big thing right here. It all works. Cash balance is a decent percentage of desired targeted reserves. coverage ratios look great for storm because we have hardly any debt. And looks affordable in terms of adding another tech mid-2015 and bringing in closer to $85,000 a year into the general fund. Now, that does result, even if all we did is the new capital plan, that does result in rate increases starting in 2016. Now, how big are they? Well, we haven't. The suggestion is that in 2016 we raise it from $10 a month to $12, then $14, then $16, then $18, then cost of living on the $18. That gets you the full up with some phasing, being affordable, the capital improvement plan, second person in storm, gets you that hit to the general fund for 10 years with a sunset, and the fund looks healthy financially.
And again, though, in review, this change comes about because of different requirements from the state auditor in how we allocate funds to different segments.
Yeah, that's a good point, Mr. Mayor.
We always seem to forget that.
The cost allocation plan, which was new 2 years ago, required to have a written cost allocation plan. Auditors are very careful about charging the utility customers, because they got to come up with rates to pay for all this stuff. Things like central service charges and computer charges and equipment and rolling stock and the mechanics time and gasoline and spare parts charges. So we've conformed to that. Has resulted, frankly, in less allocation of that kind of cost to water, sewer, storm, and therefore less central service revenue for general fund, which continues to be a challenge, general fund.
Thank you. Okay, Councilperson Watson and then Mutchler.
I'm just wondering, when will you be coming to us to talk about the sewer bonds, and is this a decision we would need to make now, or can we make it when we're talking about the sewer bonds?
Discussion only.
Just discussion only, okay.
Yeah,
when are you going to come about the sewer bonds?
Well, that's kind of to be determined. It could start as early as April or May, or it could be as late as September or October. We would want to start those projects during more like April, May, or earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I hate borrowing money and letting it sit and getting a lousy 0.11% annual interest in the local government investment pool. So I'd probably want to draw down the cash balance in sewer and then get those bonds in the fall.
Okay.
So that's kind of the way I'm thinking. Maybe even the construction loan and then a takeout permanent financing after we just draw the money in construction loan as you need it. Just hate to have too much cash and getting such a little tiny interest income return.
Councilperson Mutchler?
So last year we had to reallocate or unallocate central services money, and so we changed the utility tax from 6.5% to 9%. And I believe that was water and sewer and storm was included in that grouping?
Correct.
Just water and sewer.
Water, sewer, storm.
Sam was nodding differently.
Everything. Water, sewer, storm.
Okay, so all three of those utilities are currently today at 9.
Correct.
If we do this in order to recapture some of those sales tax, we're just talking the storm. What would be the new percentage tax rate on storm to make this work? Did you? I think
20%.
I didn't hear it. Pardon?
20%.
A 20%
utility tax. They go from 9 to 20 just on storm. Water sewer would remain at 9.
So do it. We maybe do another letter in the ordinance saying storm at this. We split it out.
And you know, and if you were so gracious as to and be convinced to adopt rate increases, it's best to get that in ordinance starting in 2016, 12, 14, 16, 18, and then COLA after that.
Mm-hmm.
That in ordinance showing that revenue is what our bond broker, you know, would advise to show potential investors there is a planned revenue stream increase to cover all those capital charges, mm-hmm, and people costs as well. So, discussion.
Okay, for the discussion, this is discussion only. The subject will come back. If you have questions or concern or anything, feel free to call Mark or discuss Mark as much as you want. Councilperson Mutchler?
Is he looking for some direction or just to clarify that?
Not at this time.
I'll keep talking periodically, and maybe he's being in ordinance one night.
Possibly. Okay, thank you. Next on the agenda, the Metropolitan Parks District. I know some of you talked about, you know, kind of waiting to see the results of another election, but Sam will tell you that we need to show you a timeline that's making it push forward a bit.
Thank you, Mayor. Council members, we've been speaking for a while about a way to perhaps enhance the quality of our park system in Ferndale. Frequently, staff hears from the community, especially issues related to the amenities of our parks. We hear from a lot of families who would like more stuff in our park, playground equipment and other type of recreational equipment. We do hear about maintenance issues simply from the fact that there's only so much money that we can allocate based on the budget we have now. One of the ideas that has come up to help our park system is the creation of a parks district. More specifically, the creation of a metropolitan park district. And I want to be clear about that because there are two other ways to create parks districts in this state. They're parks and recreation districts, and we cannot do those. Those are county-created districts, and so what we're discussing tonight is the creation of a metropolitan park district. I believe that the state legislature sort of cleaned up this law in the early 2000s, I think around 2002, that made it somewhat easier for municipalities and the public to really more easily create these, to, in essence, tax themselves to enhance their park systems. The reason why we're bringing it to you now is that depending on how you want to draw the boundaries of this park district, it can get a lot more complex. And that is both a burden in terms of management of time, but also a really good thing in terms of monetarily speaking, in terms of revenue generation. If we want to keep it just the city boundaries, within your packet, you'll see some revenue collections. We're talking anywhere from, I think, $200,000, $250,000 to up to $800,000 a year. If you draw the Ferndale School District boundaries, you're talking max up to, I think, $2.4 million to $2.6 million. Thank you. I don't print a packet. I'm Team Green, so I don't have it right now. It's a sizable difference. You're talking $2.6 million versus $850,000. And I believe that the mayor is an advocate for the school district boundaries for those reasons, for the fact that not only do we want to enhance what we have and maybe do some preservation, this community for many years has talked about some larger projects, including a pool, and we, you know, probably have better opportunities to finance that type of larger capital project with the boundaries being the school district boundaries. With that in mind, I wanted to go over this chart with you really quick, and I apologize, it didn't staple well, and that's my fault as the human who told it to print this way, but there's two charts. One is the City of Ferndale boundaries for an August election, and one is City of Ferndale boundaries for a November election.
It actually works.
It actually does work if you open it that way. But you'll notice, and there's copies for the public as well over here. If you don't have one, I'm glad folks have snagged it. You'll notice how simple this chart is for city boundaries. It's literally submit a ballot resolution by a deadline to the auditor, and then have an election. If we go a little bit more complicated route, not saying it can't be done because I'm always up for a challenge and I've already been looking into it. Just for instance, the August election for Ferndale School District boundaries, you'll see many more kind of points here that we need to meet. For one, if we want to expand to the school district boundaries, this isn't just an election of Ferndale residents. This is also an election of the voters within the boundaries of the school district outside city limits. In order to get the measure on the ballot for those folks, the Whatcom County Council has to approve a ballot resolution. If we want to go that route, this is really a partnership between us and the county. I believe that we should have some good leeway with them in general, just because in the past, the county council did place on the ballot for both the Linden area and the Blaine area, parks and recreation districts for those areas. So, you know, both Linden and Blaine have their own parks and recreation districts that are larger than their city limits. So I'm hoping to tug at the county council a little bit by saying, like, look, you spent some money on them. Hopefully you'll do it for Ferndale should we choose to go this direction. Another thing that has to happen is we have to get reviewed by the Boundary Review Board. And what that requires is it's not necessarily too onerous of an application called the Notice of Intent of Action to the Boundary Review Board, where we let them know we want to draw the boundaries, the school district, and we show them a bunch of maps, hopefully, that Yuri staff can assist us with. And they make a decision. They have 45 days to do that. And once they don't have to. They can do it the next day after we submit it, but, you know, I assume it won't. But as soon as they approve it, say it is the next day, we cannot have that election until no less than 60 days after they approve it. So that's where some of these points, these bullet points come in, or these flags. You'll see that for the August 2014 timeline, the first point is the last county council meeting to approve a Boundary Review Board proposal resolution. So both the city council and the county council need to bring, you know, kind of pass a resolution saying you want to do this, and we'll send that to the Boundary Review Board with our application for them to look at. The latest the Boundary Review Board can begin considering a proposal for the August election is April 22nd, 2014. At the same time, we would have another process where you would then consider ballot resolutions. And I spoke with the Boundary Review Board because state law is silent on whether or not we need to wait to have those ballot resolutions submitted to the auditor until they approve the boundaries. In my opinion, that means that we can approve it and send it to the auditor, and if the Boundary Review Board for some reason has an issue, we would simply inform the auditor we're not going forward with the election, and they'll stop it. There's a timeline for it. There's a deadline for that, though, so we want to be very cognizant that if we for some reason wanted to pull the ballot resolution, we have to do it by a certain deadline. Otherwise, they start printing ballots. That's the deadline. They send stuff to a printer. That deadline to get the resolution to the auditor is May 9th for the August election. And the latest that the Boundary Review Board can approve the action, can approve us going forward, is June 6th for the August primary. The August primary is a little bit more rushed than the November in terms of when we can do stuff. And the main reason why is because it feels like there's a lot more lead time from the August, when we have to submit something to the auditor for the August primary, to when we have to submit something to the auditor for the November general election. I don't know, it might actually be the same amount of time frame, but it's May submittal for the August, but the August primary election day to submit something for November. So to me, it feels less rushed for some reason to do the November election. But that's kind of how it works. I just want to send you with this timeline so you can see what it all means. The school district boundaries, it's really important for us to be cognizant of the Boundary Review Board's role in this. One action that they can take is literally no action at all. And they could just ignore our submittal. If they ignore us for 45 days, it's approved. But if they do that, that really backs us up to the deadline wall. And so I just want everyone to have that in mind as we're moving forward in this process. Just want to let you know I am meeting with County Council Member Carl Weimer tomorrow in the morning just to give him kind of the initial 101 on this. I don't believe since he's been on the County Council, which has been for some time, probably 8 years now, if not 12, I don't think they've taken an action like this. So it's new to their council probably as well. He's one of the vets these days. And I'm meeting with him because he's our kind of local rep in terms of the districts for the county council. And that was suggested to me by their clerk of the council, Dana. And I just want to make sure that we're communicating well with them. This absolutely has to be a partnership. My intent is to give him the 101 and then likely connect him with Councilmember Watson, who's the chairperson right now of the Public Safety and Neighborhood Services Committee, so that she could probably invite him and Sam Crawford, who's the chairperson of Finance and Administrative Services, to come to your committee meetings after that. But I just don't want them thrown in the fire of a committee meeting, I guess, before that. So we'll do that. Councilmember Olson, you got a question?
Yeah, when you're
done. Okay, I have just one more sheet really quick that's just kind of a little 101 regarding governance and ballot title. And this is... excuse me. Let me slow down really quick. it's really important to kind of consider the governance aspect or the makeup of the board. There's really two options, and actually three options, depending on the boundaries. If it's city limits, it could be just the council, ex officio, and that's similar to what we've done with the Transportation Benefit District. You all are the board, Transportation Benefit District Board of Directors, and you make those decisions on behalf of the TBD. It could be the same for a Metropolitan Park District for Ferndale, or it could be a separately elected Parks Board. It would be a Board of Commissioners. They're Parks Commissioners. I don't believe we have that option with the TBD. It's just state law is different. It actually gives you options for a park district. For the school district boundaries, there's one more option, and that is either elected Parks Commissioners or a joint ex officio body of City Council members and Whatcom County Council members. And the makeup, how many there are, it's basically the size, membership, and method for filling vacancies would all be determined by an interlocal agreement between City of Ferndale and Whatcom County. I actually saw, this might not even be allowed under state law, but I saw, I believe, Clallam County and Port Angeles, they have a Metropolitan Park District for a pool. And they went to voters for the pool district. It was passed, and their ballot title called out ex officio. So they did ex officio. But when they did their interlocal agreement between the county and the city, they ended up saying that the body will make a determination about one more position. And they decided that would be an at-large member that they would choose, and it didn't necessarily have to be an elected official. It doesn't necessarily comply with what state law says about the ex officio part, but it does kind of comply with the rules regarding the interlocal agreement, where it says that they will determine through an interlocal the makeup of the membership. So it's like they found a loophole to offer up a citizen involvement in that board. And I have not brought that up with our attorney, so I'm not saying that that's something we could do or should do. I just wanted to let you know that another body has done that. And it caught my eye because I thought the only options were ex officio, full elected officials, or Parks Commissioners. So that's something to keep in mind. We also have to name in the ballot title the district. We can call it whatever we want. Lloyd Zimmerman Memorial Pool District could be one option, for instance. The Double Dome Pool District could be it. We have to identify the composition of the initial Board of Commissioners. And we have to have specific language about whether the voter is for or against the formation of the district. It's very, very specific. So with that, I think that we actually need to do more than just a discussion for future tonight. We probably need to have some heavier discussion about what the boundaries are going to be. And then we need to work probably pretty quickly to determine how is this interlocal going to look between even the city and the Parks District. Does the interlocal say that the Parks District just collects the money and then it pays staff to continue to maintain stuff and it pays for capital projects that our Public Works Department will bid? Or does it say that it's a completely separate entity where we hire a Parks District Board manager, and they do everything separately? You know, those are some big decisions because, you know, depending on how you set it up, you might have to spend some more money on, to put it bluntly, some more bureaucracy. But that bureaucracy could be beneficial. None of us necessarily have run a Parks and Recreation Department. So it really comes down to what is your vision for what this Parks District is supposed to do? And I'll leave that to the council.
So before we move to your questions, because I always think of it differently because I want to know what's going to cost me. We talked about this in committee. Now, so as you refer to your chart, because that's the first decision I want you to discuss. Because your first discussion is city boundaries or school district boundaries. If you look on city boundaries, 25 cents brings you $274,000 per year. Not much. 50 cents, $603,000. 75 cents, 822. School district boundaries, 25 cents, 890 per year. 50 cents, 1,959. $250,000 average home, 25 cents per thousand, 521 a month, 6250 per year. 50 cents, $1,042, $125 per year. So you guys all know my passion about parks. You know my passion for trails. The voters, I think, are asking for this. But that's kind of your first discussion is, because that's kind of going to tell us where to go. We can't go maybe even the next step to tell you how the hierarchy is going to be until we know city boundaries, school district boundaries. I think you all know how I feel, but now I want to hear how you feel. So I didn't track names, so I'm just going to start, and I'm going to go in this way. So, Councilperson Goodrich, you are first.
When we talk about school district, does that include the Lummi Nation, and would that be, how does that come into play, the southern?
Yeah, so when we talk about the school district boundaries, we mean the exact same school district boundaries of the Ferndale School District, and that does include the Lummi Nation's boundaries. People probably would be really surprised to find out that our school district boundaries go almost up to the Canadian border, just east of Blaine. And for the record, I did all the directions right during that, so I'm getting better at the compass.
Okay.
So the areas that are, they would also pay into this, or is that excluded?
Well, the tribal members don't pay property taxes, so they would not.
That whole big chunk would not be excluded out of
Well, not that whole chunk okay. is. Say, Mark lives in that chunk, and he would pay.
Tribal members don't.
Tribal members do not.
Non-tribal members
if,
on the reservation
if
would
they're
pay.
On fee to trust. There are tribal members that have property that is not fee simple and pay property tax. Okay. And I don't really have that figure.
I have all.
That's
no
what I was just wondering about
yeah.
that.
But it's a question like on the school district vote, you know, because it's like, well, you can vote, you know, the vote is to everyone, but not all of them will pay that tax. It's kind of difficult. Okay, we're just going to go in line, so you don't have to raise your hands. Carol Bursch. Okay, Councilperson Metzler.
So that would include Lummi Island as well, isn't that part of Ferndale School?
You are
yes.
correct.
So I'm just kind of curious from a tactical vote getting perspective. When you have those sort of outlying areas that probably don't really consider themselves much of Ferndale, you mentioned up to the border, we could choose a different geographic. It'd be more complicated, but you don't have to. The school district is a little bit arbitrary.
Correct.
It's just easy.
Yes, and you're exactly right. I would add, though, that while the boundaries are very large and you're going to capture people in that area, the boundaries are very large because the population out there is very sparse.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about providing services to the folks in those boundaries, I don't necessarily know that we'd have a significant population that close to that area of the border that would be... They might be bug bite.
It's more likely to be a negative vote.
For those folks, yes. But, I mean, I'm thinking your population center is still probably centered mostly around the Ferndale area.
And you need 50% plus.
Correct.
And then you call us a Metropolitan Park District. Is this any way different than the Blaine and the Linden District?
Yes.
And you probably explained it. I didn't quite get
that. Yeah, so those districts were adopted or were approved by the county sending it to voters. Okay. We cannot do those types of districts because we're not a county. The only type of park district that a city can create is a metropolitan park district. The rules are very similar for all three types. They're slightly different. And this one actually probably has the most powers of any of the districts, to be honest.
So the county could initiate something like this, and then it would be similar. But because we're initiating it, that's the difference?
Correct. Okay. We would if they wanted to create a parks and recreation district, if the county wanted to do that, I believe that the city of Ferndale City Council would probably still have to do a ballot resolution for our voters. But I haven't looked into those types of boards because we can't do it directly. So.
Thank you.
Councilperson Ingram?
A couple of things. I know that you said that if we go for the school district boundaries and the city approves it on our election, and the county says no on their election, we can't automatically then drop back and form a city
Correct.
Boundary. We have to have a whole new election.
Correct.
What is, I mean, I'm concerned about the cost, number one, because I find that, for whatever reason, I find that extremely bizarre that if our voters say we approve it, just because the county said no, we can't say our voters said approve it, so we'll do it within our city boundaries. I don't know why that seems...
The theory...
No, just in... why we couldn't come back and just form one within our city.
As he was saying, county and its school district says no.
The reason why is that the question before the voters in the first place was, do you want to create a park district that was this big? And so if it fails, even the voters in the city theoretically were wanting that bigger one, not a smaller one. So that's why.
Okay. So what's this going to cost us to put this on the ballot?
I don't have direct specific information. I have not looked that up yet. But, for example, our normal general election, so if this was an odd year November election, would be approximately $4,000. When we had the special election for the library bond vote, that cost us approximately $45,000. And that was going it alone on a special election.
So. And if we go out and the voters all say, yippee, good idea, build us some big fancy parks, we love it. And make, by the way, put in 100 miles of trails while you're in. This money does not start coming in until 2015 or 2016.
Probably, if we said yes to it this year, collection would probably have to start 2016. Mark, when would collection start? If they approved it in November, they could start collecting January 2015.
I don't think so.
2016.
Why not?
I don't think they can.
The only one reason, if the school district puts a levy on the November ballot in 2014, they collect it in 2015. The only reason they put it on the February ballot is because it's just prior to the tax bills coming out. That's why February is so popular.
We'd have to check for that.
So I guess the question then you were asking is, a August election gets you money in 15, a November election does not get you money.
Yeah, we would have to look at that.
See if there's a
point of clarification.
All right.
If voters approve, would we be able to recoup those election costs? It might be years down the line, but we'd be able to recoup those costs out of the general fund.
Yes, it's an administrative cost of the district to actually have an election to create the district.
If it doesn't approve, then we have to eat it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Always a risk with an election.
Councilperson Olson?
Paul kind of asked the same thing as what it's going to cost. And, okay, say we go with the $45,000. Where are we going to get that?
Car washes? I don't
know. Yeah.
So, again, for clarification, a August election, you estimate?
For example, we've had a special election in the past that was $45,000. That was going it alone. So if there's primaries on there, it's probably half that cost, probably $20,000. That's my guess, based on experience. Primaries for state legislature.
But in November, it's only $4,000.
That would be on a local election year. So let's say between $8,000 and $15,000 this November.
This November?
I believe so. This is just based on my experience of what it would be. This is not our election year. This is not a local election year. So there are far fewer jurisdictions that would be sharing in the election costs than normal.
Put you on the spot. Can you kind of do a little research and maybe email it to
Absolutely.
Us?
Yeah.
I don't think we're like the school district who are obviously flush with cash to run a $45,000 election.
Yeah.
The sole thing. So if you could all let us.
Yeah, I will email Debbie Adelstein, and she will be extremely scared to provide that information to you, but she
just
will
like
do it.
Yeah.
She hates doing it. You know, she's very adamant that they're just projections.
We understand the estimates, but
Sam, what's your timeline? I mean, obviously I know you're stressed, but even if we did make that timeline, we'd be bumped to the other election.
Yeah.
So if they basically kind of gave us a direction to look at tonight without an actual vote.
Yeah, we'll get to work. And just obviously, it's not going to be me doing all of this through February, so there will be other staff working on this as well.
You're going to be in London.
I'm going to be somewhere.
Okay, yep. Councilperson Hansen.
Just a couple of thoughts.
I like the simplicity of the city only. The issue I have with it is it sounds, if you really boil it down, it's just a tax increase. City Council runs the Parks District, it gives you the ability to tax one more way. Whereas the school district boundaries, not only it does give you the ability to tax one more way, but it raises a ton of more cash, and it also gives you the opportunity to have the stakeholders out there that use the facilities and will use the facilities, even if the city builds them on their own, to be able to pay in a bit. I'm leaning towards the whole school district in terms of the way we should go with this. I think it's a very important conversation to have, though.
Great. Councilperson Watson?
I can't support the school district boundary. I'd like to see us try for the city boundaries. With school district boundaries, I want to make sure people understand that it wouldn't just mean all that money be spent in Ferndale. I mean, if you have a school district, that means you should be building parks elsewhere. And if people on Lummi Island are paying taxes, then you need to be thinking about fixing their parks, too.
Float some swings to them.
Yeah.
You're correct.
Yeah. So
it's going to change your concept. You're going to go to a more of a
regional
park. School district boundary. Yeah, those funds certainly aren't going to be allocated by a board all in downtown Ferndale, because you'd have a voter revolution. I'll go to the city administrator, but then it's
I wasn't done.
Much for the good reason. Oh, you were done? Okay, no. I'm sorry.
I would like to see us focus on the city boundaries and also to really take a hard look at those numbers, because are you really going to ask people to spend an extra $125 a year for parks? And I would like to, I'd be willing to do the 25 cents, because $62 a year is a lot for some people. But just keep it right here in Ferndale. $62 a year, we'll make a bunch more trails, we'll fix up our neighborhood parks, they'll see it instantly. And, you know, $274,000 is not small change. $274,000, you know, look at what we get from the TBD. $360,000, Janice has turned that into millions through grants. A lot of the park stuff is matching grants. You take $274,000 and try and find grants to match it, and you could end up with $500,000, which is a lot of money. And we really think about what you're asking people to pay every year. Do the people on Lummi Island, do you want them to pay $125 extra a year? How much more park is someone on Lummi Island? How much more park is someone in Custer going to get for that kind of money? I won't support school district boundaries.
Okay, I'll go to city administrator and then Councilperson Mutford and Goodrich.
I'm kind of torn as to what's the best way to go, but I also wanted, in the discussion of complexity versus simplicity, if we go with the school district boundaries, there's also going to be the issue of the ownership of our existing parks. That is, if we go with the school district boundaries and we have a governing body that representing both folks in and out of the city, what's the relationship of that body to us? That is, what's our responsibilities in our parks moving forward, and what's the district's responsibility in the parks? You know, it does make things more complicated, but the advantage is that you've got this bigger pool of interested folks and a larger pool of potential money. So it's somewhat complicated, but that's, I guess, what makes this kind of fun.
Okay, Councilperson Mutchler, Goodrich, and then Ingram.
So we could end up with a certain form of governance not really having administrative control over what were our parks, but the new Parks Board would have control over those issues? Is that where
that's something that would need to be determined.
It would be spelled out in an interlocal agreement between the district and the city.
Because I struggle as well between the two positions. In part, in terms of an election, you know, I used to live in the county, and my whole backyard was a park. You don't sense, some people don't sense quite the same need. I struggle with Lummi Island. Does this mean that there would be an obligation to build or develop parks on Lummi Island? I don't, and that is an older population now. It's a retirement group. Maybe they would support this, and it just seems difficult for me to see them supporting it. I want to just suggest that maybe it would be worth the effort just to, how much more geographically distinct can you get than an island is to separate that from the school district, as just in terms of a practical sense. But I struggle between the two views as well.
Councilperson Goodrich?
At first, I was kind of going with the school district boundaries because there are a lot of people that live in the county just outside our city limits. Go down to Axton or Smith, there's several developments that are just outside the city limits that would use our parks. but what I hear, and we heard it at the Heritage Society meeting the other night, there's a frustration by our Parks Board to do anything with our own parks. They don't have the funds to do things. The Heritage Society representative to the Parks Board is stepping down, and nobody wanted to jump up and take that position. It's kind of like, why? You know, we can't do anything. We don't have any money. Why are we even bothering? So I'm kind of more leaning toward the our own city boundaries and taking care. We have a lot of needs within our own parks. And it leads me to my question. Is there a stipulation on how these funds are spent? Are they only for capital improvements, new parks, or can we go in and replace the slide in a park that has a broken slide, or can we spend the funds for this?
It's its own separate corporate entity, and so it has the ability for to use that funding for maintenance and operations as well as capital projects. It also has the ability to seek bonding. There is council managed bonding of a certain level, and then also voter approved bonding.
You can go for a levy. The park district can go for a levy.
And I wanted to add one other thing that we talked about in committee that I forgot to bring up was that committee members wanted to know what if we started with city boundaries and it worked out great and the city of Ferndale's, this community loved it and they thought, yeah, it's time for that larger pot of revenue for those regional facilities like a pool or something like that. Can we expand? And the answer is yes, and there's two ways of expansion. If the city of Ferndale annexes land on its own, that land automatically becomes part of the district. If we want to expand to the city to the school district boundaries, it would require a petition. The Parks Board, oddly enough, it would require a petition to the Parks Board, and it would have to be signed by 25 voters within those boundaries outside city limits. As long as those boundaries did not touch another city. If there were any voters in another city, 20% of the voters in that city have to sign. So keeping it just in the unincorporated area makes it much simpler to bring that petition to the Parks Board. It's 25 people have to sign it. So if at some point there is excitement, to expand it, there should be 25 people in an unincorporated area willing to put their name on that petition to the board. And then it would go to a vote of the people.
Okay. Councilperson Ingram and then Hansen.
Well, I understand the big pool of money. I'm concerned about the sparsity of the population in the outlying districts of the school district because when Sam showed me the school district boundaries, it kind of just surprised me. So I want to offer up an alternative, kind of a compromise. I would like to see us go after a Metropolitan Parks District formed within our UGA. And the heck with the school district. Those people up north of Blaine, up by the border, they're not going to vote for this. People on Lummi Island, they're not going to vote for this because they're not going to see any benefit out of it. But our UGA, they're looking at someday being a part of this city and they're going to say, ooh, yeah, we're close. We go to those parks all the time. And I think we could be really, really successful if we drew that boundary instead of the entire school district. Because I think we'll capture in our UGA probably 75 to 80% of what we get in the whole school district. Because, as you said, the main population is in here, not out there.
Mm-hmm. For background on that, if we did that, it's totally possible. It would still require ex officio of the Whatcom County Council or elected.
I understand that. I just think it's much more doable.
I think so. Just it's a lot less land for the county council to have decision-making power over us, I think, than
To me, it's kind of a no-brainer. If we just do our UGA, I think we stand a way better chance of getting it passed, overwhelmingly passed, because those are the people that are going to come here mm-hmm. and already do to use our parks.
Yeah. And then one other issue is obviously over time, over the next 20 to so years, they're going to be annexed in at some point. So they will become part of it no matter what in the future based on annexation. So.
Councilperson Hansen?
Just one reaction. If you're talking UGA, I don't have a problem with it. I thought I talked loud enough, but I guess not. No?
It doesn't have to be.
You leave the industrial sites out. We have all of Phillips and we have all of Metalco right now. And that provides a huge chunk of property tax money. So it would lower the amount of money substantially.
I told you that. Just think it's easier to get the vote.
You will not build a pool if it's with school district boundaries. There just will not ever be enough money. However, a scenario could be argued that you form a Metropolitan Parks District with the city
boundaries and run along for 4 or 5 years and then talk to the school district or whatever property area you want to talk to, and the carrot is we will build a pool. If you annex in, we can then bond with your money and build a pool, and you'll be able to use it just as though you were a city resident. So, you know, there's a lot of directions this thing could go. We're just going to have to bite the bullet and make a decision.
Okay, I have customers in Mutchler, Watson, and Ingram, but before I go, the mayor's going to speak. How in the heck do you people know what the people on Lummi Island want? How in the heck do you people know what the people in Custer want? The only thing that you have to look at is the people in Linden, in the whole Linden School District, voted and said yes. The people in the Blaine Birch Bay District voted and said yes because they wanted more recreational opportunities. You can look in the past and you can look and say, the very first greenways levy in Bellingham that said, we're going to build trails in Bellingham. And I heard all the odds never going to pass, nobody's going to vote on trails, nobody needs to walk. That was way back when hardly anybody walked. Gosh, it said they voted yes to tax themselves. So they came with greenways too. Oh, more people are walking. We're seeing trails. Oh, this is great. Let's vote for that. Oh, no, it's never going to go. They're never going to do that. They said yes. Greenways 3. Wow, we really like walking. There's traffic jams on their trails on the weekends. Who would have ever thought that a walk-up coffee stand would be the number one selling coffee stand in Woods Coffee's empire? A walk-up coffee stand on a trail. Do you know that people in Ferndale go that there's traffic jams on the trail? And they voted yes. Greenways 3. Who would have ever thought they'd say, hey, we want to do the Thousand Acre Woods. We want to turn it into a Southside Park District, and we're going to charge ourselves just exclusively, just a little us, because we want to have parks. Oh, they said yes. I don't know. I'm not going to force anybody if we put it to a vote of going 25 cents. And I'm not going to go to Custer and say, hey, you want to park out in Custer? I'm going to hold my gun to your head. No, you're going to vote and say, okay, can you give me $62 a year? I don't know. I don't understand. I think that if we spent some time talking to the people on Lummi Island and Custer, they'd say, yeah, I'd kind of like a trail. I'd like some recreation out here. I'd like maybe a better ball field. Maybe I don't like what's happening at Custer School. I don't know. You know, but it's always tough. It's tough for your job. But I don't think you've had that conversation with those people. I don't think you've had the conversation with Lummi Island. I don't think you've had the conversation with Custer. That's my feeling. Councilperson Mutchler.
Yeah,
Watson and then Ingram.
Nobody has. Neither you and that was very passionate. Thank you. But I have to agree with both Councilmember Ingram and Councilmember Hanson on those concerns. The real estate concern. I sometimes think the compromise idea of identifying properties, which would include the industrial water, because you have housing developments out there, you have Sandy Point and things like that. I think you could include that, include some of the better real estate in that kind of thing as well. Blaine or Linden didn't get to vote on an island. Then there wasn't an island out there. I think that's a unique bugger, Mayor, but I could be wrong about that. It might be fun to ask him out there. So I'm sort of in the in-between zone because I can't decide.
Councilperson Watson.
This isn't about what I think. People are thinking other places. I am not comfortable asking someone in the county to spend that much money per year knowing that most of that money is going to be spent in Ferndale. I just believe that that's what would happen, that most would be spent here. I would prefer that we did it within the city boundaries, focus on fixing our own parks, making our own trails. I mean, it's almost $300,000 a year. That's a lot of money. We don't have any right now. We'd have $300,000. It would just be spent here. We'd do trails. All the neighborhood parks, we could fix those up. There's a lot we could do. And if we ever want to do a pool, you put forth a levy to the city, and you ask the voters, are you willing to pay more to have a pool? And that's something we could do within our Parks District as well. So, again, I don't know what the people of the county would think, and it doesn't matter as much. I don't feel comfortable asking for that kind of money because I don't think they get their money's worth.
Councilperson Ingram.
Well, I understand your reasoning. I understand your line of thought about doing it to the school board boundaries. I just don't know that in this day and age, when most people are, like it or not, struggling. I mean, I get my property tax bill and I look at what I'm paying now and I'm going, ooh, you're basing that on a $250,000 house. I got news for you, Bunky. I don't know anybody where I live that's got a house valued at less than $375,000. I don't think your house is valued any less than about $350,000. So I think the $250,000 is bogus, personally.
That's the average price, huh?
Well, I want to see something more along the lines of where we live, because it's rapidly becoming average, and where'd you get $250,000 for an average price? Was that from the realtor board?
From the assessor.
Okay.
Assessor,
okay.
Yeah.
That's the average for Ferndale.
Okay. That's good. I'll accept that. That's good. At least it wasn't something that was pulled out of another
orifice.
but yeah, I still don't think. I think that I look at it this way, Gary. The people that live out in the county, and I'm not talking about our UGA, because I still say most of those people not only know they're going to come into the city someday, they're hoping to. Okay? But the people who live out in the county live there for a reason. They've got horses, they've got all kinds of recreation they're doing on their own property for the most part. They're putting the horses in the trailer and taking them to Wenatchee. They're doing other things. Even if they've got children, they're not usually bringing those children in unless it's for soccer. And they go over to this big place over here on the Smith Road. But they're into other recreation. It's the city people who are looking for city recreation. And if you go down to the park and stand there and watch, it's like, these are mostly people we know that are coming into our parks. There's some from the county, but I think they're in a vast minority. And I just don't feel comfortable going out to ask and giving them control over our parks. I don't like the idea of turning. Where do we draw the line? What parks do we take out of that boundary, out of that district? What parks do we remove from that district so that we can keep control of them? And isn't that kind of hypocritical? Because if we tell them, park district, you're in charge of all the parks. Oh, but you're not in charge of Pioneer Park. You're not in charge of ConocoPhillips. And you're not in charge of this park.
Probably not in charge of Hovander. It'd still be in the school district.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, wow, what's the point of this? I really prefer, if not our UGA, staying with the city.
Councilperson Goodrich, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I was just going to make a comment that, unlike some of my fellow council members that are hill people, us lowlanders, there's a house for sale across the street from me that's up for $225,000, and they're having a hard time selling it. So, because they consider that high priced. Some of us live in houses that are cost less than $200,000, myself included. So,
so you're gonna
people
yes.
might have a different view than us down in the lowlanders. But,
right.
That's why we have averages.
I'll clarify. The property tax is actually not approved by the voters. The voters approve the creation of the district, and the district parks board actually makes the determination about the tax revenue. And it's actually, the options are 25, 50, 75, but you actually can do the 75 is actually a combination of two levies. It's a 25 cents and a 50 cents levy. They're separate except for the purposes of considering proration, which is where if we get too high above the max levy rate for junior taxing districts, stuff starts getting slashed so we don't go over that threshold. And one of those levies could get slashed and one is a little protected. So to be clear, the voters actually don't have a say on the money. However, if we are going to go out to voters to ask them to create a district, it probably would be a good idea to let them know what we are thinking about in terms of what would probably be levied. So I just want to bring that up. That's not directly controlled by the voters, which is odd for that.
So they could vote yes, and we could make it 75 cents.
Yes.
Or you could make it 25. So we have to let them know when it goes out. It's like these are the options. Right. It could, so they could
run. And I believe that you could, if they got upset later and booted everyone off and came in and decided they could decrease the levy rate, but they could not increase it more. Mm-hmm. So once it's set, then it's that 1% levy rate increases. But they could decrease it, they could slash it to 10 cents per thousand. It's up to 25 or up to 50 or up to 75.
Okay.
So. I would dispute with you is that there's a large percentage of people outside the city limits that use the Boys and Girls Club, use our sports program. As a person that grew up here, spent all his 58 years here, I grew up with people from Custer. They say they're from Ferndale. People from Lummi Island say they're from Ferndale. People in that county, in our Ferndale school district, say, I'm a Ferndale Golden Eagle. I'm from Ferndale. So, yeah, they know they live in the county. They know they ride horses, but they're from Ferndale, pal. Councilperson Hanson.
Where do you want this to go tonight?
Do
you want a decision tonight on top?
No. Rest.
Why don't we have a vote?
We kind of
need a vote of if you're on school district or city. We kind of need a vote on that.
Yeah, because he's got a lot to do.
Yeah,
if we
that kind of does his labor direction. Councilperson Goodrich,
I'll make a motion that we create a metropolitan park district based off of the city boundaries.
Second.
Okay, all in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed.
Aye.
Aye.
Did you vote?
I don't know that I heard Councilmember Haynes.
He didn't vote.
You voted so fast, I'm still thinking.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll vote again. So everybody knows the issue before. Okay, a yay vote is for the city, limit.
He hasn't declared the finality yet.
Okay.
Okay.
You can take a second. We don't all have to vote, but he has to. We're waiting for him.
Oh, we're going to re-vote so you're all together.
This is so wrong.
You know, we'll give the senior citizens some
time.
Maybe he can move forward. Maybe we can move forward so we can hear his vote properly.
That's
okay,
nice.
So a yay vote on this is the city limits boundaries. All in favor signify by saying yay.
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 You got it.
Did you say yay?
I said J, even though it should be I.
All opposed?
Yay.
Yay.
Okay.
4-3.
Oh, fine!
But I'll support.
Why don't you just cry about it?
But could we not still take a look at what a UGA Parks District would gain?
No, you just gave them direction.
No.
I'm happy to ask the assessor.
Why not? Because I think there's four of us that didn't want to see this going out to the entire county, but I still support a UGA Parks District.
I can try. I don't know how easy it is for the assessor to pop up information on our UGA. But I will ask him.
Would we have to give, like, streets?
We'll figure it out. Just for clarification, who voted? I have council members Mutchler, Birch, and Olson voting no. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mayor reports. Mayor was upset, wants to leave. I just want to share this. I want to share this with the public. I have questionable juveniles sweeping the streets and everything, and their work ethic is a little strange, and it's hard to teach them how to use a broom. It's unbelievable they can make freshman high school, you know, how to use a broom. So sometimes they get frustrated, where then Friday night I attended a Eagle Scout ceremony, and, we had some great, we had Eagle Scout entries from Ferndale High School, and, the Jolly family, which continues to kind of produce Eagle Scouts, like assembly line because they have so many children. But seeing that whole scout troop and all those are Ferndale school district people, it kind of uplifted me because listening to all those young men talk and everything, it's always like, never discount. We focus on the bad youth of Ferndale. We have way more great kids in Ferndale, and it's just great to see. And our future's okay. We have got some great young youth leaders coming there. So I had a bad week when I deal with those kids, and I had an uplifting Friday night. So that's my report. Council reports. None?
Wait.
Oh.
What?
So I have one of my rare ones.
Okay.
I wanted to thank the council for their discussion on the mayoral pay. For a part-time job, it'll be $21.6. Which isn't bad wage for a part-time job, as opposed to $30,000 for a part-time job, which is more than a lot of full-time people make in this county.
Mm-hmm. Great. Councilperson Birch.
I'm not sure if this is the
right thing to say, but my birthday is Wednesday, and I'm having the Ferndale Food Bank canned food drive at my shop all day from 10 to 4.
Oh.
Cash check for canned goods for a cupcake.
Ooh.
And it's a decade birthday.
Oh, sorry.
And for something like that, you're perfectly welcome to mention it.
And also, use cell phones. If you got a new cell phone for Christmas, bring that in as well, your old one.
Excellent. Great.
And that'll be turned over to the police department for their cell phone drive. And toiletries from the summer vacation. If you have any toiletries that you threw in the drawer when you got back from vacation, bring those in.
That sounds like whatever you want to bring. Bring whatever you want. You get a cupcake.
That's right.
What is this? What day again? I apologize. What day?
Wednesday the 5th.
Good job.
Happy 30th.
Cupcake. Mr. Mayor. It was a good decade. I remember the 30th.
You forgot to mention something in your report. What's the time tomorrow for that?
The 3 o'clock for the
3 o'clock.
At County
Courthouse,
upstairs,
right?
Though,
upstairs. 3:15, 3:51?
Room
5:13. I had the numbers in there. Just put them in the wrong order.
Top floor, off the elevator, to the end, take a rest.
513.
Any more council reports?
No.
Okay. Staff, going to finance director.
Nothing.
City administrator.
Nothing.
Community development.
February 11th, the county council is meeting as a whole in the county courthouse from 3 to 5 p.m. We're going to be presenting to them our UGA proposal. You're all invited, and I believe before then there is also Public Works Committee of the Whole where they're discussing Slater.
Public Works starts when?
When?
Yeah, I think so. We'll have them double check, though.
Well, that's a long day. That's a lot of
February 12th, Planning Commission.
A reminder, February 12th, here, Planning Commission, City Council joint meeting at 7 p.m. We're discussing non-conforming use.
Non-conforming utes?
Utes,
he knows about those.
Okay, everybody got that down? Because that's a combined meeting, Planning Commission and Council.
When did that go?
Last.
Everybody but you. You
weren't here and excited. You wouldn't care.
Well, that's what you get for going on vacation. You never go on vacation, you saw
that. Is that the 18th?
Oh.
I don't believe
no. It's
an
extra 12th. Okay, moving on. Clerk.
Council members, just for your information, I will not be here from February 5th to maybe February 24th. I was hoping to come back the 19th. I was hoping to come back the 19th, but people have told me that jet lag is the thing, so I've never been east of Indianapolis, so I've never experienced it. I'm a poor kid, so the trick to going to London is marry into a better family. That's what I've learned. So.
Eating pubs
have a
is
good time.
The best advice I can.
And go Hawks.
We don't care moving.
They win.
Okay, Public
Did you
Works.
Watch the game?
What? Was the game?
Okay, pursuant to RCW 42.30.110I, we will now enter an executive session for approximately 30 minutes. Council may have further discussion in open session after the executive session. So who's going to stay here to make sure that nobody steals the room?
We could be in here.